Let's go. Welcome in, everybody, to the Lakers Collective presented by Prize Picks. Happy to see y'all here. It's like a party. The Lakers, they get the win over the Cavs last night. 50 wins on the season, multiple records set, of 15-2 month of March for LA. Lots of great stuff for us to talk about today. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. I'm Trevor Lane. Guys, how you doing?
I'm doing very good. It's good to see you guys. I'm getting a haircut in an hour and 40 minutes. So this is officially my final recording with long hair. I probably should have worn it down, but I just came back from the gym, so it's a little messy right now. But it's good to see you guys, and I'm excited to talk about the team.
Yeah, what's the look going to be?
Yeah, I'm curious about your hair now.
I was torn between two different things, something shorter, something longer, and my wife gave me a good piece of advice. She's like, try the longer one, and then if you don't like it, you can go shorter. So I'm going to be cutting it considerably shorter, but it's still going to be pretty long. We'll see. You guys will get to see it on Friday.
All right.
Looking forward to it. Things are good. Lakers just wrapped up a gauntlet of a month, played 17 games in 31 days, and went 15-2. In those 17 games, fifth in net rating, top six offense, top 10 defense. Things are going well.
Yeah, I mean, the team who couldn't beat good teams beat the Knicks, the Wolves, the Nuggets, the Rockets twice, the Heat, the Magic, now the Cleveland Cavaliers. Pretty good month. Potentially set up to take the three seed. We'll see ultimately how things go. I guess let's start with the Cavs game from last night. The Lakers, explosive offense. Luka drops 42. A bunch of really, really fun plays. I thought a really good defensive adjustment going into the second quarter for J.J. Redick. Jason, what did you see from the Lakers' surprising blowout-esque win over the Cavs?
So I want to focus on the offensive end last night because I don't want to pretend like the Lakers didn't play good defense last night, but because they certainly did. But that Cavs team ended up presenting less of an offensive challenge than I was hoping for a variety of reasons. One, Donovan Mitchell's been in a pretty bad jump shooting slump for a while, which is causing him to play some pretty bad basketball in several phases of the game. Their two best shooters were out in Sam Merrill and Jalen Tyson, which forced Kenny Atkinson to go with some lineup structure where you'd see like two non-shooters on the floor. Like you'd have Thomas Bryan and Nakon Tomlin on the floor at the same time, or you'd have Evan Mobley and some other kind of like, you know, Dennis Schroeder on the same on the floor at the same time. So the Lakers were able to gap in strong side zone in a way that they might not have been able to get away with against a healthier Cavs team. Again, not to say that the Lakers have not made defensive improvements. I just want to set that point aside because I think it was less interesting from last night than how the defense looked, because the Cavs defense has been very bad post-trade deadline, but most of that has to do with Jared Allen being out of the lineup. When Jared Allen is in the lineup, they have been an excellent defensive team this year, especially specifically Jared Allen and Evan Mobley together, because there's a layering. There's a layering of size and length and recovery around the basket that's really difficult to deal with. And I think it starts with Luka, and this is the important detail. Like, and I know I've gotten in trouble with Luka fans over the course of the last few days just because I view this stretch post All-Star break to be a different level from him than what we saw for most of the season before this. Everyone gets caught up in the numbers, but the truth of the matter is that all of the top tier superstars put up monster numbers. That's just what they do. Whether it's LeBron over his career being good for 27-7-7, even when he's not at his best, right? Or like Nikola Jokic post knee injury putting up monster numbers, but not being nearly as impactful as he was before his knee injury. It starts with the fact that Luka has been the best player in the world post All-Star break. That is breaking defenses fundamentally, because you run drop coverage, you're going to get cooked like the Cavs tried at various points yesterday. And if you double team or come up to the level, you're going to start creating these 4-on-3s. So it starts with Luka being amazing. The second piece of it is, and this is something I've been keyed in on over the course of the last few weeks, the fact that Luka has been so good over the course of these last 6 weeks, what it's done is it's created a consistent set of advantages for the role players to capitalize on. And what's happened is through the relentless repetition of high quality advantages that Luka's created, all the role players have nailed the sequencing of how to pay off these Luka advantages. Remember early in the year when it was like, oh, Jackson's got this natural vertical spacing, but it feels kind of clunky with DeAndre Ayton. Now DeAndre Ayton has figured out Luka and Ayton have figured out the lob timing on his rolls. And Ayton's starting to figure out some of the little things. He set a nice Gortat screen yesterday that got Luka a wide open reverse layup on the left side of the rim. So now both bigs are providing 48 minutes of quality rolls in this system. And the off-ball talent is really starting to click. Obviously, Rui Hachimura just being dead-eye on his catch-and-shoot threes and dead-eye on his one-dribble pull-ups when he does get chased off the line. You've got guys like Austin and Luke Kennard, who are both excellent catch-and-shoot players and excellent closeout attackers. LeBron is starting to hit threes at a higher rate. It's not quite like what you would hope to see yet, but he's starting to hit them. And the big thing that LeBron brings that none of the other players bring is when he drives closeouts, he's excellent at hitting the center. This is something that a lot of players struggle with because it's such a specific, refined type of passing, like a lob on a drive or a drop off of a drive. Most players drive closeouts and they hit the next shooter in the chain. LeBron is incredible at racking a closeout, getting the big to step up, and hitting lobs to Jackson or lobs to Ayton or drop off little bounce passes to Ayton or Jackson. Jake LaRavia has started to knock down catch and shoot threes. That's made him a substantially more threatening offensive player. It all is just coming together off the ball. And so when you have the combination of Luka consistently breaking defenses because he's the best player in the world right now, and the off-ball talent nailing the sequencing time and time again, you get this unstoppable offense. And I think someone tweeted out, like, the offensive rating with Luka on the floor last night was 150. That's absolutely insane. They were so good on offense last night, they literally got the Cavs to quit. They quit in that game. And so I came away from that game like, we came into the season thinking if the Lakers were going to have any chance to win the title, they needed to become unguardable on offense. And they've become unguardable on offense. Even the Luka off groups, obviously Austin and LeBron had a rough shift to start the fourth quarter, but I thought their shift to start the second quarter was amazing. They were amazing in that group. So it's just all coming together on offense, and that to me is the major takeaway from last night's game.
We knew that they were going to have to reach an offensive ceiling to get to where they wanted to go. They have the potential, the upside, in order to be a top five offense in this league. Defense, it's a little bit more of a question about what their true ceiling actually is, especially once we see some regression from opponents' three-point shooting. But the bottom line, their offense is going to be what carries them, and they are indeed hitting another level. It does help when Jake LaRavia is perfect for the game, right? He's 2 for 2 from three, and he hits all of his field goals, all of his free throws, all of that. That will help. When Rui's hitting shots, that's going to help. The Lakers did have some other guys knock down shots in last night's game, but there's also just a rhythm, a flow to it. And you're right. The Cavs last night, they threw in the towel. They tapped out the start of the fourth quarter. And the Lakers immediately took their foot off the gas and kind of let them come back in and all of that. It's that actually made the game look closer than it was, because the Lakers just kicked their asses especially the bulk of the second and third quarter. And the Cavs didn't have much of an answer for them. Jovan, we were talking a little bit before we came on the air about how fun this stretch has been for the Lakers here. What were your takeaways from this, and then big picture?
Well, they're also doing this all without Marcus Smart, or at least last night, the last few games. And I was going through the lineup data last night, and Marcus Smart had, unsurprisingly, the best net rating of any Laker in March. They had a plus 18.3 net rating with Marcus Smart, on the floor, combined a couple words there. And with him on the floor, they had the league's best offense and the league's best defense. So that just shows you, I think it was like a 121 offensive rating and a 103 defensive rating. Elite on both sides of the ball. And they did not have him for a matchup that they could have used him in against a Donovan Mitchell and a James Harden. And I thought Jake LaRavia and Austin Reeves both really stepped up defensively. Jake is the primary guy on Donovan. Austin is the primary guy on James Harden, and played some great defense last night, all things considered. So doing it without Marcus, who has been the plus minus leader, the net rating leader, on off guy for the group, I think has been impressive. Of course, like, last few games have not been the best competition, but doing it last night, I thought just check that box of like some real progress, even without Marcus, who we've seen earlier in the season when Marcus has missed a game here or there, there's been a real defensive drop off. And last night they were able to sustain a certain level of defense. But I echo everything Jason said. I think they are reaching this point offensively where it feels like it is a game of whack-a-mole, and whatever you try to take away, they're going to have a quick counter to that, and maybe it takes them a possession or two to kind of figure it out, but they're quickly figuring these things out. The processing is at a higher level. The decision-making is at a higher level, and I just don't really know what you're supposed to do, especially when they're shooting at a certain level, right? Because I think that's, they've cleaned up the turnovers, but the shooting, I would say still, like, in general, turnovers and shooting are the two things you're like a little concerned with this group, right? So if they're taking care of the ball, which they've been, I think they were sixth in turnover percentage for the month, then it comes down to the shooting, which, I mean, they've been a top five three-point percentage team for over a month now. So, like, the shooting has been at a certain level for... Yeah, post-All-Star, like, they've been a great shooting team. A big part of that's been Luke Kennard. I think Luke Kennard, even when he's not having, like, last night goes 1-for-2, has a couple points, like, even when he's not having a big offensive impact necessarily in the box score, I think his gravity, his ability to attack closeouts, get into the paint, driving kick, like most of his assists, when he has 2, 3, 4 assists, it's often the driving kick variety where someone is panic closing out to him, he gets past them, initiates the blender, and then it's a driving kick or maybe a swing, whatever. So I think Luke Kennard has unlocked a lot with some of these bench groups. And yeah, I mean, it just feels like right now, whatever you throw at the Lakers, they have a different look. So I'm thinking about last night to me was more of a power matchup for LA in terms of Cleveland had the speed and athleticism advantage on paper. So LA, it was more DA playing more than Jackson. Like you saw a material difference when Jackson was out there in terms of the rebounding and sort of the paint play versus DA. It was also more of a Jake LaRavia matchup where Jake, we know he can play bully ball, really good rebounder, tough, hard-nosed guy, going to muck it up. But then I think about like the Orlando game. That was more of a Jackson game, leveraging his speed against their size and power. Luke with his speed, Austin, etc. So I think the Lakers also have different styles that they can go to within their identity, depending on the opponent. We can play a little bit bigger and lean into power ball, or we could play a little bit faster and smaller and lean into some of our speed. I wouldn't say athleticism because they're still not a very athletic roster, but like they do have some quick guys. Like Luke is a quick player, even if he's not very athletic. I just think they've been firing on all cylinders. I think JJ Redick deserves his flowers. He's been pushing all the right buttons, and back-to-back 51 seasons for him. I think things are just trending in a really positive direction. The only thing that is unfortunate about this stretch is like Lakers are 15-2 and Spurs are 14-2 and OKC's, 14-2, Spurs, OKC's 14-1. So like in theory, they should be like clearly the best team in the West right now. That's not the case. OKC and San Antonio are both right there, but it sets up for a great matchup on Thursday.
Yeah, the Thunder, the Lakers, and the Spurs combined for a total of 5 losses in March. That's combined. Insane. That's insane. That is absolutely insane. They just keep winning. But the Lakers are in position to potentially lock up that 3 seed. I like what you said about the versatility of the offense, especially the ability for them to play a lot of different styles out there on the court. And that's going to be critical. You know, we think back to, not saying this is what's coming for the Lakers, but we think back to the 2019-2020 team that went on that run and won the championship and all of that. Why was it they were able to do that? Well, it was in part because they were able to play a lot of different styles come playoff time. Frank Vogel had a lot of different buttons he can press. Oh, the opponent's throwing this at me? Cool. The response is this. We need to go smaller. Alex Caruso, guess what? You're going to start in game 6. Markieff Morris, you're going to play more minutes at the 5 in this one. Oh, you're going bigger? Dwight, go get him. JaVale, go get him. We're going to do these things, right? You had all these different ways. Now, that's the defensive side of the ball. But offensively, they do have, I think, the same, to steal a Rob Pelinka phrase, optionality, right? To play a lot of different styles and hurt you a lot of different ways. And then even if you do stop their initial actions, there's always the bailout of Luka hits just ridiculous, absurd shots all game long. And if you happen to try to pressure and get up on him and not allow the shot, well, guess what? He's going to go to the free throw line because he's going to pump fake. You're going to bite. And we're still getting points anyway. It's just very difficult to stop this Lakers offense right now, which, again, does kind of set us up for a matchup with the best defense in the NBA coming up tomorrow against the Oklahoma City Thunder. So things are looking good for the Lakers. But Jason, let's talk a little bit about this matchup coming up, though. What do you need to see from the Lakers? Like, have we already seen enough to say this is real? Or if they fumble against the Thunder tomorrow, does it immediately fall back to, well, they're not quite on that top tier level?
I don't see any universe to where if they go in on Thursday and get their butt kicked, it's like something you could sweep under the rug. It would certainly be discouraging. I mean, like, there's always like levels to the competition in the sense that, you know, the Lakers in this win, this 15-2 stretch, if I remember correctly, the two, well, you have the Detroit loss, then you have the Denver loss, but I think the loss immediately before the streak was another Denver loss, meaning 15-3 in their last 18 games, if I remember correctly. So if you look back through this entire stretch, they've played what most people, like if I asked you guys just to name the top four contenders in the NBA, you're probably going to say OKC, San Antonio, Boston, and Denver. Those are probably the four teams that, would you guys agree that those are like the top four teams that are like going to be considered the biggest threats to win the title, not counting the Lakers?
Not counting the Lakers, yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Detroit's a tricky one, yeah. but yeah, I think I would pick Denver over Detroit.
I discount Detroit because of the shooting, but yeah, that's another conversation.
Yeah. And we don't know what's up with Cade. Yeah. That's another factor.
And the table, the Detroit thing, because I do want to come back to that, because I do think Jovan's making a valid point there with respect to big physical defense, which we can get to in a minute. But among those four, there's like playing good teams, like the above 500 teams. We're going to consider that to be like, you know, Houston, Phoenix, you know, Atlanta, Miami, those kinds of opponents that you might, Orlando, that kind of thing. Then there's like the really good teams that we're going to look at the Knicks win there. That's a really nice win against the Knicks, right? Minnesota. It's a really, maybe Houston's in that group, depending on how you feel. Houston, we caught Houston before Şengün kind of found his groove here lately, but like there's levels to the types of competition you can play. And so in the last stretch of games, we've played teams that are actually in that top four twice. And there was the game in Denver where we competed, but we got off to a bad start, and late in the game, we couldn't get the stops we needed and we lost. And then the second Denver game where, yes, they shot insanely well. It was magnet ball down the stretch, but they kind of had us on the ropes before the Austin, you know, kind of like game-saving play at the foul line, right? So, like, I think if they lost the OKC game and didn't really compete, it would certainly be concerning because it's yet another one of those benchmark tests. But at the same time, let's be realistic. They're not going to go in there and score on them like they did against the Cavs. But at the same time, OKC is having some issues with some shooters going cold. Caruso's shooting below 30% from three on the season. AJ Mitchell has cooled off as a three-point shooter. J-Dub's been kind of in and out of the lineup as he's nursing this hamstring thing, and he's had some good shooting games, but he's had some bad shooting games. Like, this is a game where I think the Lakers' defense should be able to do some damage to OKC's offense, and OKC's defense should be able to do some damage to the Lakers' offense. My main thing that I want to see is I just don't want to see them get completely dislodged. And what I mean by that is, like, if it looks kind of like the Orlando game and the Detroit game where, like, we're hanging tough, but the offense isn't super clicking, that's more or less to be expected. That's playoff basketball. That's rock fight basketball. I just don't want to see us get completely dislodged, turning the ball over against ball pressure. OKC is 27, 28 points off of turnovers. We're down 15 all game. That to me would be the major discouraging thing. What I'd like to see is I'd like to see Luka look at Lu Dort and be like, hey, dude, I'm better than I was at any point you've ever tried to guard me before. Good luck with this shit. I want to see Austin handle some of these quick physical guards at the point of attack and have a good, efficient game. I want to see LeBron show the ability to bully some of their perimeter players. I want to see Ayton hold up against Isaiah Hartenstein and against Jalen Williams. And some of the other, like, Jalen Williams has been playing really well and playing a lot of minutes for OKC as of late. So, like, I really just want to see the Lakers go in there and play well. Even if they lose by 3 or 4 points and Shea games them with another one of his step back 15 footers that he seems to never miss in crunch time, that to me would be a huge step forward, given that we all know this is going to be a playoff intensity, everyone going 100 miles an hour, everyone playing as hard as they possibly can. If they let me just put it to you this way. If they split this series, these two games, I would call that a big win, as long as they're competitive in both games.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yes, yeah, so if you split those two, especially because that would set you on pace to lock up that three seed. And if you look good in those, the key stat I'm going to be keeping an eye on, it's the turnovers. That's, you know, the secret sauce to the Thunder. And there's a lot that makes them very, very good. It's not going to be just one thing, but they typically enjoy a field goal attempt advantage. And I don't want to start the whole free throw conversation. I think that's overblown when it comes to OKC. But the field goal attempts that they enjoy, it's because they don't turn the basketball over and they force a ton of turnovers on their opponent. And so they typically get up 7, 8, 9 more shot attempts than their opponent does. And it's difficult to win the game when that's the math equation and they're pressuring you on all your shots. So your field goal percentage is going down anyway. It's what makes OKC so good. So what you can't do is go into OKC and turn the ball over 20 times. Now that's easier said than done because their defense is very good, very aggressive, very physical, maybe fouling a little bit more. Maybe they get away with a little bit, but this is a very aggressive physical defense. It's the type of defense that we have seen the Lakers at times struggle with. It's why my X factor for this game is Austin Reeves. He is the one that if somebody is going to struggle with a physical, athletic, aggressive defense, it tends to be Austin. He's had games where he has indeed bucked that trend, and he's done a nice job, but I think he is the X factor in this one because of his propensity to turnovers when things can get a little bit out of hand. He's got to hang on to the basketball. The Lakers have as a team, got to control the ball, cannot turn it over, can't play into OKC's game. Got to make sure that you're keeping that category close, and then that'll give you a good shot down the stretch, potentially go win the game. Jovan, what are you looking to see against OKC?
I want a competitive game, you know, similar to Jason's point, whether it's a win or a loss. I think this is a measuring stick game for me. I made the point on my show last night. I think this is arguably the most important game of the season. And I think someone had asked me that in the very beginning of the season. I did a mailbag and someone asked which game are you looking forward to most over the entire 82 game season? And I was like, this game, because I had a feeling that the Lakers and Thunder would both be playing for something. Thunder are still trying to stave off San Antonio for the one seed. Lakers are trying to lock up the three seed. You also have the subplot with the MVP race. And forget what we think, forget what anybody thinks. Just go by the betting markets. Shea has been the favorite, but his lead has been decreasing and Luka's odds have been increasing. And so regardless of the narratives and the discourse and whatnot, just taking that at face value, Shea is dropping in the race. Luka is rising in the race. Luka just had, to JJ's point last night, one of the greatest months we've ever seen a player have in NBA history. And so I think there is going to be something to that game. Does that lock up the MVP race for Shea, or does it sway the MVP race for Luka if the Lakers win? I'm not going to go that far, but I think when we look back at the MVP race some years, there are moments. And I think about, for example, 2017 was one of the best MVP races of all time. And Russ had some moments down the stretch of that season where I think there was a game winner in Orlando. There was a near game winner in Denver. He had several monster triple doubles down the stretch. Those were some of the moments that with a tightly contested MVP race swung it in Russ's favor. I think Luka has a couple of opportunities against the OKC here to follow up on the month that he just had. But to Trevor's point, just looking at the two previous games, because I think my fear would be it looks more like the first game, because I think we've erased it from our memory, but Lakers lost that game by 29. The game was basically over by the end of the first quarter. Shea was the best player in that game. He had 30 points on 10 for 18 shooting. Luka, 19, 7, 7, 4 turnovers. Austin, 13, 5, 3, 5 turnovers. Austin's had 5 turnovers in both of the games against OKC. So just looking at the turnovers, Lakers had 15 in the more recent one, 20 in the first one. They shot under 33% on threes in both matchups. I think they got to take care of the ball better and they got to shoot better against OKC. And we've seen some real progress in both those regards, but I am thinking about Kayson Wallace hounding Austin Reeves 94 feet and what that's going to look like. I'm thinking about Alex Caruso hounding Austin 94 feet. What's that going to look like? I'm thinking about them throwing the traps at Luka, and then they are probably the best team in basketball at playing at a disadvantage defensively and making it look like, okay, you have the 4-on-3, but like we're going to pick your pocket here, or at least, you know, rotate at a quick enough level to stop that initial advantage and then rotate back into matchups. So I think it's going to be really an interesting test for me, more so on the offensive end for the Lakers versus OKC's defense, because defensively there are things you could do. I think JJ will cook up something against Shea. I think the doubling isn't going to work to the same level that it's worked against Minnesota or Houston or some of these recent matchups, where you're not going to have Shea retreating to the half court line and like turning the ball over the way that KD did. OKC is much better at playing out of that than, you know, some of the recent teams the Lakers have had success with. So I, like, that'll be its own interesting, you know, side of the floor dynamic. But for me, it's how does the Lakers offense look against OKC's defense? Because frankly, it does not look good this season. And they're 0-2. They have turned the ball over. They have not shot the ball well. And they've looked, frankly, rattled at times against OKC's speed and athleticism and frenetic style of play. And like on paper, when we think about the worst version of the Lakers offense, it has been this type of defense that has turned them over and not let them get into a rhythm. So this to me is a big test to see. Like, I think the Lakers' progress is real, but they're going to have to go through OKC at some point. So like, if we're talking about a conference finals or a finals, you're going to have to go through OKC. And if they can't score against OKC's defense at a certain level, they're not beating them. So like that's my big thing is just how does it look against OKC? And then of course the subplot, like Luka versus Shea, who has the better game, who outplays who. I know it's not a direct like one-on-one matchup, but Lakers are going to throw the kitchen sink at Shea. OKC has an army of perimeter guys to throw at Luka. Like, I'm excited for that part too.
The Lakers and Thunder haven't played since February 9th, so that's pre-All-Star break. I think the Lakers are a very different team, but this will be a good test to see where are they really at. Now, they've passed a lot of tests so far over the last month. Now we're really going to find out how true is what they've become on the offensive end of the floor. They only put up 110 on February 9th when they played the Thunder. They only put up 92 the first time they saw the Thunder this season, but that was way back in November. Again, a lot has changed since then. This will be a good test of how much of things really change, especially when you go up against defense that is really the Achilles heel for this Lakers team stylistically, the way that they play, and they are for most teams. That's why they're the best defense in the NBA. But this is going to be a real challenge. Jason, we don't know about the availability of Marcus Smart just yet. How critical would his inclusion or him being out, how critical would that be for the Lakers and the ultimate outcome of this game?
Well, he'd be absolutely critical. I mean, like, we have Bronny James in our rotation right now, and it's been fun. And by the way, Bronny's been playing better. The shots haven't started to fall yet, but I think his overall, like, athleticism and ability to compete physically at the NBA level is miles ahead of where it used to be. And just like being in the right spots in the game plan, just like little things like that I think have come a long way from where he used to be. But Marcus is just, like, as Jovan has laid out, he might very well be our fourth best player. And so him being available makes a huge difference, especially against an Oklahoma City team that's very talented. I do want to add one last detail with this matchup. I do think our defense can help our offense in a lot of ways here, in the sense that, like, if the Lakers lay out their defensive scheme the way I expect them to, which is a lot of like what we've seen, and it's basically what we saw yesterday even in the switching scheme, where any sort of ISO at the top, we're gapping pretty hard, and any sort of cleared side ISO, we're strong side zoning, just bringing that defender over across the lane line. If we're going to do that sort of thing, and we can do it to great effect, which is going to require competing on the ball, rotating out of it, defensive rebounding, handling the slashing off of swings from guys like J-Dub and A.J. Mitchell, that kind of thing. If we do that well, we can force Degnault to lean more into some of his shooting lineups, which is one of the big differences between this Oklahoma City team and last year's Oklahoma City team, is Jalen Williams, over the course of the last 30-something games, is taking like 6 threes per 36 minutes and hitting 45% of them. So he's been a guy that they've gone to as like a stretch five in like a legitimate, like, high volume look for them. Or Jared McCain as like a different type of look that they've gone to, where they just situate him on the opposite wing. if we can get Dagnall to lean more on Jay Will, Jared McCain, Isaiah Joe, that can in turn on the other end of the floor create more entry points into Oklahoma City's defense, which can get Luka going, get Austin going, create some of the types of advantages that can feed on themselves. And so our defense has the chance to help our offense in this one if we can execute our defensive game plan well enough to force Dagnall to play some of his less defensively talented personnel.
That'll be an interesting chess match with J.J. Redick and Dagnall, who's one of the very best coaches in the NBA. That'll be another subplot to this game. I can't wait for this one. This is such a great test for the Lakers. If you can find a way to get a win against OKC, that really puts you on the path to locking up the three seed. They're in a close battle right now, two games up in the loss column with Denver. So there's the standings race. There's the MVP race. There's, you know, where do the Lakers really stand in the Western Conference? So many subplots to this game. I absolutely can't wait for it. We're going to take the final half of the show. We're going to dedicate it to the Q&A. So taking questions, comments from all of you coming in the chat. So fire them off in there. Real quick, I want to give a shout out to our presenting sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. We appreciate them so much. They do a fantastic job. Their Prize Picks app, super, super easy to use. You guys can find it in the app store. You can find the link in the description. Go check out Prize Picks. All you got to do is pick more or less on a few player stats, and you can lock in your lineup points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, threes, whatever it is. Personally, I kind of like the PRA, which is points, rebounds, and assists all combined, levels things out a little bit, but super easy to use. You can follow some of your favorite people on there as well. You can see their picks and see what they are doing. Right now, there's also a new user offer. You play $5, you get $50 in your lineups. To download the app, use the code HMA, and the link is in the description. So again, that code is HMA. Play $5, get $50. Prize Picks available in most states, including California, Texas, and Florida. Go check them out and use that code HMA. Again, big thanks to Prize Picks for sponsoring Lakers Collective. All right, guys, let's get into our chats here. And we'll start with this. Usually pessimistic, but this team's got me hyped. Guys, I do think last night went a long way with Lakers fans to say, hey, like this, there's really something cooking here when you not just beat the Cavs, but you've got the Cavs throwing in the towel after three quarters. That, I think, has Lakers fans starting to believe. Obviously, we have to see it come playoff time, but you know, Jovan, I mean, you see it in your interactions every night. This is a very fired up Lakers fan base right now.
Oh, yeah. I think there's been a real shift within the fan base. And I think we've discussed this on our show as well, where go back to the Boston loss, which was 5 weeks ago. Like, it wasn't that long ago. That was the low point of the season. And I think around that point, I mean, we got super chats on here. I would get it on my show of like, can't wait till the off season. Can't wait till the Lakers move on from, you know, this or that, or can't wait till they reload the roster, whatever. And we're not getting that anymore. It's been a lot of positivity, a lot of optimism, and a lot of excitement for the playoffs. And I'm just really excited for this postseason. And regardless of how it goes, I mean, I think losing in the first round would be a massive disappointment at this point. You know, barring something happening to maybe Denver and Denver dropping to six and LA losing to Denver in like a tight series, okay. I think that would be a pretty competitive coin flip series. But aside from that, if they lose to Minnesota or Houston in round one, I think at this point I would be disappointed. And regardless of who they face, I think they're entering with a certain amount of momentum because Houston, it's like played a little better lately, but overall they've had this malaise, like extended malaise here for quite a while where they just have not been a really good team. And then Minnesota, like, didn't have Ant for a while, and then they get him back, and then they lose JD McDaniels, and now he's out week to week, and we don't even know if he's going to be back for the playoffs. They haven't given us an actual timetable on when he'll be back. So, I mean, the playoffs start in less than 3 weeks. So JD McDaniels, we just got dubbed week to week a few days ago, and like, so it's going to be cutting it close. So you're either playing a potentially compromised Minnesota team that's trying to put it all together right before the playoffs start, or you're playing a Houston team that you just walked down twice in their arena a month ago And I really like the Lakers clutch offense versus Houston's clutch offense. I think second round at a minimum, but then we get into the whole San Antonio conversation and whatnot. Like, I just think there's a lot to be optimistic about. And this team has done a 180 on where they were even going into the month, right? Like, there was not the same level of optimism. I mean, even like, I think things really shifted like mid-month, but it's just been a really fun ride for this group, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm getting the same thing. Not nearly as much conversation about, still a little bit, but about what they're going to do over the summer, and a lot about who do we want in the playoffs? What's the matchup? How can we get past this team or that team? Those conversations were not happening just a few weeks ago.
I'd say it's been 2 months ago, we would have been a plus 250, plus 300 underdog in our first round series, regardless of who we played. And mm-hmm. now we're probably a minus 150 favorite, regardless of who we play in the first round. That's a huge shift in the outlook in this team, not just from like fans, but from Vegas.
It's been so impressive, the turnaround for this team. And that's brought life certainly into the fan base. It also helps when you're watching not just the team play well, but also the run Luka is on is absolutely insane right now. We're seeing individual greatness. We're seeing team greatness on a nightly basis. It is phenomenal. This one says, you can't, on one hand, say OKC and the Spurs are deeper and have a better roster, while since the offseason, everyone trashed the Lakers roster and had them missing the playoffs, but were the third seed. He's got an addition to it. He said, adding to from my last super chat, everything I've stated should be the reason Luka should be the front runner for MVP. Rosters are not even close after the sixth man compared to the top teams. How much, I don't know. I mean, Jason, how much do expectations going into the season matter for the MVP race?
I think they matter. Like, I think where Luka fans and myself have had a disconnect is Luka has had an incredibly impressive season. He's done a remarkable job of uplifting this roster. But it's just really difficult to beat the specific bar that was set by Wemby and Shea to this point in the season, specifically when you factor in the totality of this picture. So, guys, Jovan just talked about it. For the majority of this season, we were like talking about the off season. Like, yes, there's I saw this little screenshot going around this morning, and I think it was Kendrick Perkins talking about how JJ had lost the locker room. And it was at a point in the season where the Lakers were the third seed. And the reason why is because this has been what's killing me, the revisionist history. Before the All-Star break, what the Lakers had accomplished was basically through winning clutch games, they had dominated every inferior team they had faced. And every single good team they had faced, they didn't just lose, they got their butts kicked. Before last night, the Lakers' point differential against teams in the top 10 in point differential was literally worse than the Golden State Warriors. And that was after we ran through a bunch of good teams in March. So, like, the truth of the matter is the Lakers did look like a really underachieving team relative to their record for the first 50 games and change of the season. Now, there is a precedent. There's one precedent that we can point to for a player who uplifted a bad team or a mediocre team and won MVP, and that was 2017 Russell Westbrook. But it was a very unique set of circumstances. One, LeBron James and that Cavaliers team was mailing it in the Eastern Conference. I didn't think they were going to lose, but there were a lot of people who were like, oh, they're going to lose to the Raptors. They ended up sweeping everybody in the East that year. But like, they didn't look very good in the regular season because they were just coasting because they knew they were better than everybody. And you're not going to get an MVP for coasting, right? And we all know that Steph and KD were playing together tax. And so they had no chance to win MVP. The three best players in the NBA basically were disqualified for effort or for playing with each other. And so Russ kind of found this gap where he slid into, like you guys pointed out, through riding the moments at the tail end of the season that he had. This season's different. And historically throughout NBA history, yes, the MVP tends to come from a really talented roster. He tends to come from a team that is pretty good even when they're not on the floor sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, there are examples like the Jokic on-off numbers that were crazy, but like a lot of the MVPs tend to come from really good teams. And so there really isn't an example of a guy winning MVP where for 5 months of the year we thought their team sucked, and for 1 month of the year we thought they were a contender. There's that usually doesn't happen in NBA history. Again, it's all relative. I think Luka's had an incredible season. I think he's been the best player in the world post-trade deadline. You're competing with a guy who's having the most efficient guard season since 2016, Steph, for literally the best team in the league. That's the bar right now. And the guy who's competing with him, the only guy who really has a shot, because like right now most sportsbooks have Luka around plus 1500, which is an extreme long shot. But the one guy they're giving a shot to is Wemby. And it's a guy who, even though the team is negative when he's off the floor, they legitimately have a shot to get the number one overall seed this year because of how dominant Wemby's been when he's been on the floor. Possibly the greatest per-minute impact we've ever seen. So, like, it's not a question of, is Luka better than Wemby? I do think Luka's better than Wemby. I do think that this version of Luka post-All-Star break is better than Shea. The regular season MVP is a season-long award that has historically gone to a player playing for a team that performs in the standings the way that OKC has or the way that San Antonio has. It's just the reality of the way this has worked. I've always looked at MVP as a combination of three factors. Who's the best player in the league? Who's the best player on the best team? Who's the most valuable player to their team? Luka has a really good case for best player in the world. It's him and Shea right up there at the top. In best player in the best team, both Wemby and Shea have an edge. And in most valuable, guys, look at the on-off numbers with Wemby. Look at the offense with Shea is 10.5 points better per 100 possessions when he's on versus when he's off. He's hit 52 clutch shots this year for a team that has the second best clutch record in the NBA behind the Lakers. Shea's hit 52. Lucas hit, I can't remember off the top of my head, I think it's like 18. So, like, it's not a question of whether or not Luka has a good MVP case. It's just that Shea and Wemby have better ones. And it's unfortunate because, like, Luka is playing so well right now that it feels slanderous and offensive to be like, this guy's not the MVP when he's, like, kicking everybody's ass every damn night. I get it. But, like, we don't have to sit here and pretend like we weren't all coming on this show for 50 plus games talking about how this team had no shot. And since Russ, which again, as we mentioned, was an extenuating circumstance, there really hasn't been a guy who's won MVP on this type of team before.
I think when we look at the idea that they were bad all season, they had a good start to the season. There was a lot of optimism, and you could look at my numbers and everything that would show that they had a really good start to the season. There was a lot of optimism around the team. It was more of a slide in what, December and January. I understand where I've said this. I don't think it's going to be any kind of an egregious decision if SGA wins it, if Wemby wins it, if Jokic wins it. These are great players, right? We're splitting hairs between them. And it's not like we're talking about, oh, you know, Alperen Sengun somehow won the MVP or something like that. And all these guys go like that. That would be something to be up in arms over. Any of these other guys winning it is perfectly fine. I mean, there's no debate that these are all phenomenal players. And if Luka played the way he's played since the All-Star break all season, he's probably the runaway MVP. He's got it easy, right?
Well, and also just some quick context here, because we were just talking about the optimism shift in the past month. The Lakers were the sixth seed as recently as March 7th. That was less than a month ago. So, and between, I believe, January 7th and March 7th, 2 month span, the Lakers were either the fifth seed or the sixth seed, depending on the day. So I think there's been a little bit, and I'm not even, this isn't even necessarily a point with the MVP discussion. I just think in general, there's been a little bit of revisionist history of the Lakers have been playing this way for like the entire season, or like, it was like, no, they were clearly, I mean, by any statistic, they were the sixth best team in the West. There was no case for them being a top five team, but like they've completely flipped the way we view them in this past month with prior to this past month, They were, I think, 4-12 against teams with a 60% win percentage or better. This month, now they're 6-2. So, like, it's been a dramatic shift in terms of their success against the best teams in the past month. If they played like the past month, that's a 60-win team, I think. That's a team that's right there with OKC and San Antonio. And I think Luka probably would be Luka would probably be a Shea level MVP favorite at that point, or maybe even a stronger favorite than Shea is up to this point. And then the one thing I have noticed from some fans, but with the San Antonio stuff, is just been, I think there's a revisionist history with how San Antonio was perceived going into the season. Like, I am dialed into the national pods. I'm dialed into the power rankings and preseason projections and stuff. I know people will reference the Kevin Pelton projection on ESPN, but one thing that has been misrepresented with that is that was, he ran 1,000 simulations and he just chose to pick a simulation to talk through it. So that was actually not Kevin Pelton's like real Western Conference projections. No one in their right mind had the Lakers 13th. Now, I know some people had them missing the playoffs. Some people had them as a play-in team. But I think if you surveyed like the top 10, I'm sure you could go back to Jason's show. Like, you surveyed the top 10 podcasts or preseason rankings, like the Lakers, I would posit, were ahead of the Spurs in at least 8 or 9 of the 10. So like, if we're talking about the expectations of the Lakers being like a play-in team for some people and being the 3 seed, I think we do have to acknowledge that the Spurs were almost universally considered worse than the Lakers and are now going to be the 2 seed and potentially win, you know, 7 more games than the Lakers or whatever it ends up being from a differential perspective. So again, I'm not like wading into the waters of MVP. I don't really want to continue to relitigate it, but I just think that's an important context of like the Lakers have made a dramatic shift here over the last 3.5 weeks from a standings perspective. And then also San Antonio was considered to be worse than the Lakers. And I think it, you know, testament to them that they have overachieved to this degree.
Yeah, no, I definitely had the Spurs in a lower tier than the Lakers. Me had too. Them as the most likely to jump up a tier, but even I didn't have them as potentially jumping up 2 tiers the way that I think they did and the way they played. They definitely had an incredible, incredible season San Antonio has, and it's a lot of credit to them, the way that they have done this. I think, you know, we could talk about the MVP stuff all day. In fact, here we've got this comment said, some MVP voters argue in bad faith. This week, former voters said Brunson's better than Luka. It's clickbait.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, see, this is the issue. I have no problem. I have no problem if SGA wins it. I have no problem if Jokic, if Wemby wins. No issue with that whatsoever. It's when you get people that come on and say Luka is simply, he cannot defend at all. He's this horrible defender, all of this. I'm like, that just tells me you haven't been paying a lot of attention to Luka lately. Or if you're one of the people that says, well, Luka is disqualified due to his defense, but then they want to champion Jokic and things like that. That's the part that drives me crazy. It's when there are actual people with legitimate MVP votes that just don't seem like they've been paying that much attention and are falling back on old narratives. That's what gets me upset about all this. You want to tell me Wemby's the MVP? You want to tell me it's SGA? No issues whatsoever with that. You can make a strong argument for that. It's when legitimate MVP voters, people who have a vote, don't seem to know what they're talking about. That's what gets me upset.
Brunson was really good in December when Luka was slumping. And that was like the 1 month that I thought Brunson played better basketball than Luka. And then he immediately tailed off. And Luka's been like kind of steadily ascending since then. And he's been tiers above Brunson since then, like multiple tiers. I think Trevor's making a great point here. And this is the last thing I'll say about it. Like, I think that the Luka fans trying to say that he's the MVP this year, I think they're engaging in revisionist history and they're a little out of their minds. But I do not blame them at all for being upset for some of the shit that's been thrown around. Because to your point, Trevor, some of the shit that's been thrown around by actual voters is straight up asinine, like straight up asinine. And so I think what ends up happening there is, you know, there's such thing as a straw man, but it turns to something more than that when that straw man is a voter, because then all of a sudden it's like, wait a second, these are people that are actually dictating these outcomes that clearly have no idea what the hell they're talking about. And so I do sympathize with Luka fans, because I don't blame them for feeling victimized, when the kinds of things that I've seen over the last couple of weeks have gone around. But that also doesn't mean Luka's MVP. Like, does that make sense?
Yep. 100%. All right, let's get to this one here. Said, and JJ Castillo said, three things do you like about how this team was playing in March, predicted the potential 8-9 man and predicted the potential 8-9 man playoff rotation. We've done that a bit, but why don't we divide and conquer this? Why don't we each come up with one thing we really like about how the team has played in March? Jovan, let's go to you first, then we'll go Jason, and I'll close it off.
I think for me, it's been the defense. So top 10 or your 10th in defensive rating for the month of March. I think the offensive stuff has been encouraging because ultimately the best version of this team is like best offense in the world, top three offense in the world. And I think the offense will ultimately dictate how far they go just because that's their superpower as a group, right? And the advantage creation with Luka and Austin and LeBron, and then the finishing from DA and Jackson as lob threats, rim runners, Luke and Rui as spot up options and weak side attackers, potentially Jake in that role, depending on how big of a role he plays in the playoffs. But like, you know, Marcus as well. I think there's going to be a playoff game or two that might come down to just how many open threes does Marcus Smart hit, right? Mm-hmm. Like teams, that's, if you look at the starting group, like that's the clear tactic that people are going to have against them is just play off of Marcus. But the defense to me has been just at a level that I wasn't quite sure they could get to, because it's not just been like, think about it. They were a top 10 defense in this month. And yes, they played some bottom dwellers and had some blowouts, but they did it playing 17 games in the month, which was the most anybody played in the league. They had several back-to-backs, really long road trip, and they played a bunch of really good teams, as we've discussed. And even like the bottom has fallen out in Miami and Orlando, but like going into those games, those teams had extended stretches of playing well. So I think those wins were more impressive at the time than they are in retrospect. Then you had the slew of statement wins against the top teams. Like they did so, yes, offensively, but so, like the New York game was more of a rock fight than you know, like some barn burner shootout. The Minnesota game was a rock fight in that first half. The Houston first game, like they've won some of these games with their defense and with the game-to-game strategy from JJ and the coaching staff. So I think for me, yes, the offense is, it's been great to see the offense reaching a certain level, but I also think like they of course need to defend at a certain level, and they've been doing that. And like, if they can hang around the top 10 here down the final stretch of the season and play like that in the playoffs, that just gives them even more of a chance to go further.
The one thing I would piggyback on with Jovan, specifically with the defense, is I have been really impressed by the Lakers' defensive rotations, just like how connected they are, the efforts they make when they're behind the ball on defense, meaning like when they do end up getting beat off the dribble or any sort of advantage situation, just the way they've recovered out of those situations has been really impressive to me. I even think that's ahead of where it was in the playoffs last year. I think they kind of reached that level before LeBron's injury last year, and then I think they kind of struggled to recapture it post LeBron's injury, but I think they have that now. I'm just going to go with the offense specifically. Before the season, I thought their formula to being a legitimate championship contender was not just good offense, not just great offense, but legitimately unguardable offense, and I think that they've really flashed that in this stretch. Basically, we have almost 400, I think actually over 400 minute sample now of LeBron, Luka, and Austin post deadline. That's over a 120 offensive rating. And like, even in the stretches of that road trip where their offense kind of stalled out, it felt more fatigue related due to like just travel, crazy game. And I liked the quality of shots that they were getting for the most part in those games. And so I just think that the Lakers, like if you were checking boxes of what you needed to achieve in order to reach their ultimate goals, that level of offense was something they've needed, and that's something that I've seen.
I think big picture for the team, the communication has been phenomenal out there on the court. They've been doing a much better job there. But to single out a player, it is, I'd like to talk, we've talked a lot about how good Luka has been. He's been phenomenal. One of the things that I think is a big indicator of what the team's done in March, it's LeBron. It's LeBron James, because not only is it that LeBron has been good, but it's how he's been good. He's taking four less shots per game right now than his career low. Four less shots, but not than like just last year, than his career low in shot attempts per game. We're seeing a LeBron that's doing headfirst dives after the loose ball, right? In that Denver game, we're seeing a LeBron that's very bought in. And to me, we can look at all the advanced metrics. We can look at everything, but we can look at the teams the Lakers have beaten. We can look at all those things and we could say, does this prove the Lakers have a shot? Does that prove the Lakers have a shot? We've got a guy with more experience than anybody in NBA history in LeBron James. And I'm telling you, you don't get this version of LeBron James if he doesn't think this team has a shot. So my favorite thing about what we've seen from the Lakers, it's getting this version of LeBron right now, because to me, this is the greatest indication that LeBron, who has the inside view at this team, who has been there, he's been to the top of the mountain, he has done it. He has done it all in the NBA. He sees what this team has, and he says, this team has a chance. And that's why we're getting LeBron playing the way that he is right now. Again, he's not taking all the shots. He's not handling the ball a ton. He's not doing all the typical LeBron stuff that we think of over the course of his career. He's done a masterful job of being very malleable for this team and doing what they need him to do. But the way he's locked in on this group right now, I think it speaks volumes about what this team has, what he believes this team has, maybe bleeds into a conversation about his future. But LeBron James, what we've seen from him in the month of March, certainly one of my favorite things about this team.
Really quick stat for you guys. Do you remember how LeBron had a negative on-off rating for the majority of the season?
Yeah.
And that was like the narrative. And then obviously we had the famous Windhorse clip. Like, this is a great team with Luka and Austin and a bad team with LeBron, right? So like, and we all called that stupid in the moment. So we're all on the right side of history there. But it was very clear that LeBron wanted to send a message. He's been so good in the month of March since coming back from that brief little injury spat. He has, in just that stretch, flipped it. Now he has a positive on-off net rating. Now the Lakers are 1 point better when he's on versus off. I thought that was funny.
It's crazy. As far as the potential 8 to 9, we've talked about it a bunch, but I think it's the starting five with Marcus. I don't think you guys will have any disagreement. And then it's going to be Hayes, Rui, Kennard, probably Laravia is the ninth man in the rotation.
Jake hitting threes is huge.
Like, it is.
I think he could allow JJ to run a longer rotation if he keeps shooting like this.
Yeah, because Marcus has been the only true two-way like perimeter role player. And obviously with Rui and Luke, it's more the offense. With Jake, it's been more the defense. If Jake can make some shots and play with confidence offensively, I think that shifts his role. And yeah, I mean, look, I said it last night on my show.
Right through.
It was like last night, I'll welcome the Jake comparisons. You know, I'll yeah. take it last night.
Great dunk, Jovan. Dude, I was eating some tacos and I was like still chewing and I just got off the couch and started yelling like mid-chew. So I was like, oh, God, his ass, Jake.
that was the play of the game. That was amazing. That dunk
the Austin lob to LeBron was pretty good too.
That was good.
That was pretty awesome. That was indeed. But people are very complimentary of your dunking prowess.
I appreciate it, guys. I just gotta get that NBA check in the mail.
There it is. I really want to see Vando tomorrow versus OKC. Guys, I've had a lot of people talk about, you know, why isn't Vando in the rotation? You know, we can get into why, and I know, Jovan, you've done some digging on the numbers behind Vando on the court versus off and all those sorts of things. But the bottom line is, JJ's not playing. He's not part of the rotation right now. I mean, we saw Bronny getting minutes last night ahead of Vando. That's where we're at, and that's not to say it's because Bronny's been bad. He's been significantly better. But Vando, he is just – I'm not anticipating going into any game or expecting to see Vando in the rotation, because JJ has very clearly decided that that's not – the way this is going to go.
I don't need to see Vando tomorrow.
Yeah. Let's go to this one here. Kristen said, are we worried Denver could fall to 6 with some tough games coming up?
No.
I mean, I guess it depends on what happened. Do OKC
they have an easier schedule. Their schedule is deceptive. Like, the one game for them is the San Antonio game, which will have some stakes to it because San Antonio is still trying to play for the one seed, but they play OKC and San Antonio the last two games of the season, and there's a real chance that the one seed is locked up. I guess what's interesting with the whole Lakers OKC matchups over the next week is the Lakers beating OKC actually makes it more likely that they play them in the second round,
right?
And they potentially drop out of the one seed. And on the one hand, I think you'd be encouraged because you're like, okay, they have a couple wins against OKC late in the season. You're more optimistic with the matchup. I still would rather play San Antonio than OKC, regardless of how these next couple games go. I just think OKC is the better and tougher team. But it is interesting that like the Lakers, in a way, can dictate their second round matchup to some degree, depending on how they perform against OKC. But Denver, I think Denver's probably going to go 5-1 down the stretch here, like with the loss potentially being that San Antonio game. But they have a pretty easy schedule, definitely easier than Minnesota and Houston.
And keep in mind, they have the tiebreaker over both those teams, too.
If Denver beats San Antonio and the Lakers split against OKC, then there's almost no chance that that the Spurs or Thunder play their guys in those last couple games, which means Denver could finish the season undefeated, which is kind of why, like, basically, if the Lakers lose the two Oklahoma City games, they have to win out the rest of the games. So getting one of the OKC games gives you the ability to potentially punt on the final day of the season. So, like, yeah, I still think splitting against OKC is just a huge it's almost like the final milestone for this Lakers team that they need to hit to, like, finish the regular season, if that makes sense.
Somebody brought this up on my show last night, and I don't want to go back into the MVP conversation, but we could be living in a crazy world where, let's say, Luka plays really well and the Lakers go 2-0 against OKC and Luka is awesome. That could ironically actually get the MVP for Wemby by moving the Spurs.
Exactly. I made this point on my show last night. Someone super chatted, like, if Luka sweeps OKC with these two games, does that lock up the MVP for him? And I'm like, it actually might help Wemby win.
Yeah.
I know, like, fans don't want to hear that, but like it might actually kick the door open for Wemby.
Yeah, I think Shea's MVP case is like a two-part case. It's best player on the best team, and is this guy the best basketball player in the world right now? And like, if Luka beats him specifically dominates those two games and looks better than Shea, it takes like the shine off the apple of Shea's best player in the world case, which then removes that. And now Wemby's case is the absurd on-off numbers. It's like insane. They're negative with him off, and he has the second best raw plus minus in the league when he's on the floor. Like, that plus best player on the best team, Wemby's case all of a sudden becomes really compelling. Again, like, it would be cool. It'd be cool for Luka, but I think it would require him winning both of those games and Wemby getting like some sort of nagging injury that causes him to miss three of these last games so that he gets disqualified, which is what your plus 1500 odds are. Is like, what if Wemby ends up getting a nagging injury that causes him to get DQ'd? And what if Luka dominates Shea head to head? So to be clear, Luka doesn't have a 0% chance. It's just a near zero.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's go here. I think Luka has a chance, but anyway, I'm gonna go back into that. Luka guaranteed first team.
Oh yeah,
I would think so. Yeah, he's definitely gonna wind up first team in all NBA. Any other Laker third team?
No chance.
No, I mean LeBron's they're not eligible.
There's too many games. Yeah.
No, so that's not gonna happen. Okay. Well, guys, I kind of like we on purpose set aside more time to get into our chat questions in the second half of the show here. I think this worked out pretty well. Happy to see everybody here, of course. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you guys hit the subscribe button on the Lakers Collective YouTube channel. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Guys, this has been a great stretch. I know we got another show coming up on Friday after the OKC game, and we'll see. Big game coming up tomorrow, but this was a lot of fun.
It was good to see you guys. I'm looking forward to Friday. That's going to be an all-timer. It's either going to be straight doom and gloom or just like adulation. It's one of the two, so we'll see.
Sure, there will be no overreactions on either side of the ledger on Friday.
None whatsoever. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us here again. Hit that subscribe button. Till next time, we'll see you and stay safe.